complaint filed against an individual who has a pending application for licensure with the board. The board must determine what action to take concerning the application, given the complaint's allegations. Dr. Davy, will you provide a brief summary?
I will provide a brief summary as best I can. The issue here was twofold. One, in terms of timing, prior to this applicant even submitting an application for licensure, the board received a complaint with regard to the individual's conduct. However, no one could act because we do not have an application in front of us. And then we did receive the application, which allowed the committee waiver analyst to review the application and then to take a look at the complaint that was submitted prior to that timing. The reality of the situation is that the complaint is very concerning on multiple levels. The committee was needless to say, very concerned about the behavior of the individual and what they engaged in with regard to potential fraudulent activities, with regard to billing, and the issues related to that that occurred that impacted the agency, that could also impact the behavior analysts that were assigned to supervise the individual. The individual also was notified that he needed to inform the BACB, our national certifying body, of the alleged violation. The day he was terminated for the inappropriate behavior, he actually received his certificate from the National Association. The National Certification Board. They have been informed of what's going on here, and they have received self-disclosure from the individual, as well as information from the complainants with regard to this application and this complaint. They are waiting to hear our findings before they act in the process of going through their investigation as well. I think what I will end with is that the in response to the committee's question, the complaint stated that there were over 55 occurrences there of overbilling that stretched back into 2019 in their investigation. The complainants and the agency the complainants worked for did a thorough investigation, provided the board with multiple levels of material to review in order to understand Mr. Oliver's conduct. The board reviewed that information. In looking at all of the information that was provided and listening to discussions with regard to Mr. Oliver's overall perhaps abilities as a skilled clinician, regardless of his abilities, the issues were concerning and a direct violation of ARS 3221611 12A, obtaining a fee by fraud or misrepresentation. ARS 32-2061-12P, falsely or fraudulently claiming to have performed a professional service, charging for a service, or representing a service as a licensee's own when the licensee has not rendered the service or assumed supervisory responsibility for the service, and ARS 3206112DB, possibly violating an ethical standard adopted by the board as it pertains to Section 1.04 Integrity, 2.13 Accuracy and Billing Reports, the BACB's Professional and Ethical Compliance Code for Behavior Analysts. As part of their motion, the committee recommended that the board deny Mr. Oliver's application based on the three violations of unprofessional conduct. That motion carried 4-0. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to first ask for the complainant, DW, if they can move forward, and then after the complainant, I'm going to ask Mr. Oliver to make a brief statement and answer any questions that we may have. So first, the complainant, DW, thank you for being here today. We appreciate it. If you'd like to provide some comments to the board.
Madam Chair, members of the board, I am mostly here just for any questions that you have. I believe we've provided a substantial amount of information. This has been a very difficult time for myself as a business owner, my business partner, the other supervisors involved. This has not been an outcome we were hoping for. Mr. Oliver was a valued employee with us. The team enjoyed his work. The parents that were receiving services for their children had a great relationship with him. These findings were a shock to us and very difficult for all of us to process. Now, one of the things that we did, because all of our employees are registered with the certification board as technicians, we are mandated to report to the board. There is a question when you report to the certification board that says if you live in one of the following states, you must report to that state as well, which is one of the reasons why we sent the complaint in prior to the application, is because in order for us to complain at the national level, we had to attest that we also complained at the state level. So for the most part, I'm just here for any questions that you may have regarding the materials or the circumstances.
Thank you. Questions from the board? Dr. Flowers?
Yes, I'm wondering, you know, looking at all the documentation and statements, I wasn't clear if the investigations are completed or if there are things that are still pending and unresolved.
The BACB, I believe they will wait until the findings of this board to make a decision. And then they'll decide from that circumstance. Now, he is a board-certified behavior analyst, so I'm sure their process will look very different because it's different than, I would imagine, applying. As far as the Gilbert Police Department, there is an active investigation still going. We are working to get certified copies from the software company that we pulled the fraudulent billing, the forgery, that information, because although I've provided all of it, the police department's requesting that the software company also provide it. And so we're working with them on that at this time, so that's still a pending investigation.
Okay, thank you.
What are the ramifications to your company?
Not including, I kind of stopped tracking some of the administrative costs associated with this, but we are looking at owing the insurance company close to $4,000. We are looking at administrative costs as far as reporting, auditing. This was a very substantial investigation. We expected our staff to go through. It took about four individuals. Probably the most important ramification from my perspective is that there were two other licensed behavior analysts that were involved. They were supervisors on the cases that this occurred. One of which has been a behavior analyst for quite some time. One is a newer behavior analyst. So this is a very frightening circumstance. It's very difficult to be in a position, you know, with behavior analysts, we do a lot of tiered services. And so we really have to trust the technician that's going into the home. And so this, I think that the hardship, both emotionally and just in questioning their own supervisory ability, is probably the most trying for me as a leader. I have a difficult time kind of processing what they're going through because I know this is probably extremely difficult for them. As far as the clients are concerned, we were very fortunate to be able to have an action plan in place. When we first had concerns, we were talking about possibilities of what it would look like if our concerns were to come true. When we had a substantiated one, which was that date in September when the occurrence of forgery occurred, that's when we knew we needed a plan in action. So we were able to implement a plan without any delay or any gaps in services for the members. We were able to put that in place. So as far as the services go, the clients are all able to receive services. They're doing well in treatment. As far as the impact that it has on parents, though, that is a big change. We provide in-home services, so these individuals are going into their home. And as an organization and as an employer, we equally have to keep the privacy of the employees as well. So I can't go tell the parents what happens. We have really respected Mr. Oliver's dignity and his confidentiality and his right to have this information to maintain confidential. And we are we have not disclosed to the families the details of this circumstance. What that has caused is some of the families to have a little bit of distrust in us. They feel that that we abruptly let go of somebody that was very meaningful to their treatment team. And so we've had to do a lot of kind of cleanup around that, and that's a difficult position to be in.
How did you handle this? The allegation is that time was misrepresented and often several. So Is it your opinion then that the patient was not receiving the full amount of services that they should have been rendered?
Correct. We originally saw it from an administrative side as far as non-billable work, so kind of admin work, were substantial in comparison to peers and the amount of time being. And that's something, I mean, those are, what I said at the time that we started to look at that was that's more of an agency issue, and we needed to develop policies and process around that. What really stood out was an instance in which Mr. Oliver was expected to be in a session, and he had made a phone call to a supervisor, and the supervisor was like, aren't you supposed to be in a session? And so she monitored kind of the outcomes of that appointment very closely to see if he was going to accurately represent the time of that appointment. So from our perspective, what it looks like is early on in the employment, it looks like there may have been some rounding errors. So many of the kind of extra amount of time that the child, that we billed insurance the child should have been receiving services could have been just because that 15-minute unit was marked incorrectly. It's still a problem. We're still refunding all of that to insurance. However, there were a couple of occurrences in April that kind of red flagged the supervisor as being a little bit strange. She sent an email both in April and in May saying, you can't do it this way, please do it this way. She followed up, she made sure that those appointments were corrected. And then after that time, we saw an actual increase in leaving appointments where the parents would be signing the exit note, sometimes as great as an hour before the session was supposed to end. So those individuals did not get those services. Now, one of the things that is inevitably going to happen is once we're done, we've been working really closely with Blue Cross Blue Shield. They don't have any jurisdiction to be able to do anything other than they have noted the circumstances. When we reconcile the billing, it is possible that some of the billing is coming out of a patient deductible or a copay, and at that time we will have to sit with those patients. There were four different patients involved. We will have to sit with those families and explain, or potentially just say it was billed wrong. And we're still working through the legal ramifications of giving the money back to the parents as well, because once we reconcile with insurance, we do at least for one case know that there will be a refund owed to the parents.
So if I heard you correctly, what you're saying is that Mr. Oliver received a email memo of correction from supervisor saying, hey, I noticed this behavior, and then after that, the behavior continued, if not maybe worsened?
Correct. There were two emails, April 1st and May 1st.
All right. And when you confronted Mr. Oliver in regards to this, what was his reaction? And I believe you terminated him, but what was his response?
So one of the things that we had decided on, since all three supervisors were affected by this, normally the way that we would handle an HR issue is between a single supervisor and a representative from HR. However, all three supervisors were affected by this, and so we kind of decided that all three of us together would deliver the information. We had made up our minds, there was no talking about it, and so we felt asking questions about it was not necessary. Our information was specific. However, after providing the details of the termination, so we stated, you know, at this time you will no longer be working for this organization. We have reason to believe that these occurrences occurred. We walked through all of that. I did say, you know, this is a very difficult situation, and we always have a value of wanting to have others be heard. And so at this point, I will, you know, open it up to, if you'd like to say something to us, you're welcome to, but you by no means have any obligation to speak to us at this point, because we had already at that point termed. And while Mr. Oliver didn't outwardly admit to any of the allegations, he didn't seem a little, you know, disappointed in himself, and he took a deep breath, and he did make mention to the fact that he was having to take care of his own, that he had made decisions to prioritize himself, essentially, and he was apologetic to supervisors. However, that was quite concerning to us, that was kind of the only response that would come of us giving that opportunity. I would have much rather him say, no, thank you, pick up your bag and leave.
All right, any other questions? All right, we do appreciate you coming today. You can go ahead and sit back in the audience.
Thank you.
Mr. Oliver, are you on the phone?
I am.
All right, would you like to provide some comments to the board? If you, please introduce yourself. If you could first introduce yourself for the record and then provide some comments, and then we'll probably have questions for you.
Yes, my name is Colton Oliver. I am here to make some statements to the board as well as answer any questions that they might have. In regards to the complaint, there's a couple of points that I would like to emphasize. First and foremost, it's good hearing from the complainant and her side of things and perspective. There's been almost 4 months that passed since the information was passed down to me about my termination, and so a lot of reflection and self-examination has been able to take place since that time. I would like to issue a formal apology to the complainant and her organization for this instance and for the things that have occurred. You know, I think there's interesting things that are happening with this complaint in that I have built a very close relationship with the complainant. I was taken under her wing, so to speak, and was learning actively about the field of behavior analysis at that time. I would like to state that the supervision and oversight for this particular case was of a lighter nature. This case is almost 2 hours from the complainant's primary address and over an hour in drive time from her place of business. This resulted in infrequent visits and as well, the complainant holds many hats and has a lot of responsibilities in the social behavior analysis. This is not an excuse on my actions or behavior, but more of just a context for the board to understand where my mistake was in not reporting the schedule changes for the client at that time. I would also like to state to the board that this instance that is being brought forth was truly not an egregious or malicious matter. I would leave the area where services are being rendered and eat a brief lunch and then go to my next appointment that was scheduled on the other side of town. And so I would like to stress that this complaint was not of a malicious intent to jeopardize the Aspen organization, the clients that they work with, the families, the insurance provider, any other parties involved, but was a very novice and short-sighted mistake on my part as an RBT being supervised by the plan. I'm glad to hear that the families of this issue have been taken care of by the complainant and her organization, and that she is doing everything in her power to correct the mistakes made on my part. For that, I'm very grateful, and I hold no ill will or malintent towards the complainant or her organization. So the last thing I would like to just mention to the board is that the complainant had mentioned that I had shown a lot of promise in the field of behavior analysis, and I had grown a great connection with the families that they serve and other caregivers under our responsibility. Both of those things are true, and I have made commitments since being informed of my termination to correct those actions and to learn from my mistakes as I have gained my BCBA certificate. I'd like to answer any questions that the board has at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver. Questions of the board?
Plain and simple, this is Dr. Davy. I'll ask the question. Did you forge someone's signature? Mr. Colton? Mr. Colton, are you there?
Yes, I'm sorry.
So my question is plain and simple. Did you forge someone's signature?
My apologies. I'm having a tough time hearing the question.
Mr. Oliver, I believe it's Oliver, right? Mr. Oliver, the question that was asked to you is, did you forge anyone's signature?
From the initial complaint, there are four instances that are indicated on Appendix D, I believe. Of those four instances, there is one forged signature. The other three, however, are not.
Thank you.
And which one is forged? Mr. Oliver, did you hear my question?
No, may you repeat the question, please?
On the form, you said there was one forged signature and one not, and three that are not. Which one of the four was forged?
The instance where there is no match.
The employee's home address, the unknown one? I'm looking at the list now. Excuse me?
That is correct.
So verified caregiver signature for the company says unknown. Non-verified signature submitted by Mr. Oliver. Is your signature forged? Which signature are you saying? There's only one signature here.
Those would be signatures that are provided by the front of staff, seeing as the client was in the school setting at that time.
Oh, okay. This is Appendix D. Am I looking at the right one?
I believe so.
On page 13. All right, so you're saying that the third. All right, so it's the verified caregiver signature comparison is unknown, no match, and then you're saying, okay, that one is forged. Sir, do you believe that honesty is an important part of the job requirement?
I do, and there's something about the psychological and emotional distress that I've gone through since being terminated from this position. As I said at the beginning of my statement, there's been a lot of time for personal reflection and introspection, and I'm able to understand where I had made fault and take responsibility for those actions, as well as give context. And answer your question in short, I do believe that honesty and integrity is of the utmost importance in our field, and I have had to learn that the hard way.
So based on the information that's provided, it appears, and I guess I'm asking is, that some of the clients were not provided the full time service that was supposed to be rendered to them. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And although you charged for the full time, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And what have you done since being terminated that has helped you or somehow redirected your thoughts on this situation?
That's a great question. Since being informed of my termination, I have taken a great stance of reserve and an apologetic nature towards the complainant and the organization, which I was so incredibly grateful to be a part of. I have worked with them at every turn since being terminated to hand over materials, cooperate, give full information, and work with them in this process and not be a burden any further than was already indicated to me. Since then, I've taken some time away from the field behavior analysis to collect myself, identify who I want to be as a person and as a professional in this field, if I still want to be in this field of behavior analysis after this incident. I have taken that time and decided to find gainful employment in the field currently, and I have decided to go with an organization that prides themselves on the utmost care, integrity, doing things the right way by the book every single time. I have looked to gain supervision from my employer, as well as gain further continuing education on the items specific to this complaint, one of which is ethics and the ethics violations that are in question, as well as behavior analysis in the school setting and other fees like it. I've also looked into and will take time to engage in counseling and professional development and emotional development so that I can better understand this complaint, grow from it, and become a better clinician.
Have you taken any of those continuing education credits since the...
I have taken... I'm sorry.
Since the termination, have you taken any continuation credits?
I have taken one continuing education credit. I plan to take more as...
Which class? Which credit?
Ethics. The general ethics course. It's provided by an employer.
And Mr. Oliver, the allegations that appear from what I heard was that you had good behavioral skills. Working with the client, the allegations are more for your regards, I guess, personal judgment, basically prioritizing yourself, a financial gain per se. How are you planning on, that's a personal issue. How are you going to change that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I believe that can be done through supervision.
But did you have supervision and your supervisor actually acknowledged a concern, I guess, in two memos, so you were supervised, although it appears that even after that, behavior continued, if not worsened. How would it be different next time?
Well, as I stated before, the stress and emotional and mental burden that this has placed on me has put me in a very humbling and apologetic state. And I believe that my perspective on the field and my place in that field has changed drastically since September of last year. And so I don't have a direct answer to your question, but I can tell you that I have learned from this mistake, and I will continue to learn from this mistake, and I will continue to seek out and develop in a way that counteracts this mistake.
All right. Any further questions? Dr.
Yeller. Yes, sir. What kind of feedback are you receiving from your supervisor regarding this issue that you're facing now? What feedback are you receiving?
I haven't received any specific feedback from my current supervisors. I have, however, received feedback from the complaint that was issued towards me, as well as hopefully gaining some feedback and insight from the continuing education.
Are you not discussing, you know, this experience that you've had with your current supervisor? Do they even know what happened? Do they know what happened?
They don't have the full details to understand.
I guess I don't understand. That's sort of the point of supervision, is to address outstanding issues. Maybe you can explain that.
Yeah, I am still building rapport and a relationship with my current supervisor. And that is the conversation that I will have to have. However, this new supervisor and new environment is rather novel.
Can I ask a quick follow-up? When did you start working with this new organization, Mr. Oliver?
Monday.
Of this week?
Yes.
And during the interview, so I'm assuming you were interviewed for this position, and you filled out any background, you know, questions, applications. Did you disclose that you are currently under investigation?
No, this question was not specifically addressed during my application process and hiring process. It is definitely a conversation that needs to be had, and thought after with my current supervisor. And I appreciate the board questioning, as it's brought more light into how I can address these issues with my current supervisor.
Mr. Oliver, where are you currently working?
I'm working at Center for Autism and Related Disorders.
What is your position there?
I'm a clinical supervisor designee.
And what does that entail? What is that? What are the qualifications of that particular position?
I don't have the exact list of qualifications in front of me, so that question may be difficult to answer.
Does it require that you are licensed? Does it require that you are licensed as a behavior analyst? Does that position require that you're licensed as a behavior analyst in the state of Arizona?
The position doesn't require the license as of yet.
Well,
I saw this opportunity as a way to gain the supervision and the continuing education while still working in the field. And I have been open with my employer about not having a licensure for the state of Arizona, and that it may take some time as I work through some processes with the board.
Are you providing behavioral analytics services in the capacity of your new position?
Not just kind of.
All right, are there any further questions, Mr. Oliver?
Oh,
Dr. Flowers.
Yes, I'm wondering, maybe this was already covered, but I guess I'm not sure the specific official or regular grammar on this, but one of them is you fudged on your time. You put down too much time for what you did. Was there any rationale for that? And what I mean is sometimes people have reasons. Sometimes people have, well, it's going to take me a while to do a report, so I'll count that as part of the time. Was there any of that, or was it basically just be nice to get some extra money, or do you recall your motivations?
It's a good question, and I appreciate it because it provides more context to the specific situation. The excess time that is being reported by a complainant is due to a scheduling with the client's school schedule at that time. The session was billed from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. lunch, and lunch proceeded at 11:20. So there's a 40-minute excess where sessions were billed for. However, services not provided. And the rationale, as we announced previously, was that the services were no longer required at that time, as she was in a group setting, transitioning, eating lunch, and as I stated before, this client was in a somewhat of an inconvenient location, and this was something that was discussed at the onset and onboarding of this client. And again, I want to stress that this assessment time was not used for monetary gain. That is not my intent or my state of mind at that time. It was simply to scarf down a quick lunch and get to my next appointment across town. And so I hope that gives a little bit more context into the scheduling issues with the client, my context at the time, and really speaks to the area where I made a mistake in just communicating to my supervisor, DW, at the time, you know, hey, this client is going to lunch at this time, can we get the schedule changed? A very, very easy correction to this mistake, but it is one that I have taken responsibility for and acknowledge.
All right, thank you. Are there any further questions? If not, we'll go on to deliberations.
Thank you.
No, I don't hear any further questions. Thank you, Mr. Oliver, for your comments. We are now going to go into deliberations. I'd like to remind the board that this is not a hearing, and therefore we cannot adopt finding of facts or conclusions of law unless Mr. Oliver is properly noticed. That being said, if you decide to grant him a license, we have the option to do so under the terms of a consent agreement prescribed in probation and discipline and our corrective action. The terms of the agreement would serve as a final adjudication of the complaint. The board may also deny the application, and if we find he fails to meet the requirements of ARS 32-2091.02(3), being of good character or six, or not have committed any act or engaged in any conduct that would constitute grounds for disciplinary action without a license. In this instance, we would provide notice to Mr. Oliver of his rights to appeal the decision. We can now begin the discussion and deliberations. Mr. Davies, would you like to begin the discussion?
Yes, I think it's the committee has made the recommendation that this application be denied. The applicant engaged in behavior that is questionable at best. Distance, supervision, any other things that are put forward by the applicant are not an excuse to defraud families, not an excuse to defraud insurance companies, not an excuse to defraud those that are trusting that the individual is engaged in their daily activities. With that said, you know, this is new information to the individual that he has these shortcomings and needs to deal with them. The committee also suggested that the individual take some time and not just reflect, but engage in some hard activities, including further supervision, further CUs, further trainings. Take some time and come back and tell us and show us, demonstrate to us that you have righted your moral compass with regard to your behavior.
Okay. Other comments? Dr. Flowers.
Yes, I'm wondering, I'd like to get some legal advice. We'll go into executive session. That may come as a surprise, but
yeah.
I would like to do that.
Is there a second? I don't hear a second. All right, so motion doesn't carry.
Okay.
It's my understanding that if we deny the application, Mr. Oliver can apply again, but the burden of proof is on him to show that he's improved. And again, I would agree with Dr. Davies, I think I would be more comfortable, given the situation, that there is actual substantial evidence, whether it's continued CE credits, you know, he's in a job where he hasn't explained the situation. He should, I think, as Dr. Gill said, you know, be receiving, you know, guidance and supervision and from the new supervisor that could be shown as a, you know, good faith effort as far as improving. But at this point, I'd have concerns. And I represent the general public of issuing a license. Dr. Bohansky, I think you have something to say.
This has gone way too far. This is, did we get this accepted application or not? And he's got a thousand other problems in terms of employment issues and ethical issues and personal issues and professional issues, and this is not the center for that. He's presented as an unworthy candidate to pursue licensure here based on the research that indicates fraud. At very least, and forgery, and based upon that alone, I would say that we deny the application and would so move.
All right, awesome. Motion, and we have a second.
Just for clarity of the record, is that based on ARS 3229.1.023 and 6?
For clarity of the record, I will go through the areas. Hold on one second.
Ms. Smith, could you mention that again?
Yes, the qualification is the applicant. 3229.1.02. You referenced number 3, which is the be a good moral character requirement, and number 6, which is not have committed any act or engaged in any conduct that will constitute grounds for disciplinary action against the licensee pursuant to this article.
I think that's fine.
And I believe the committee cited some professional conduct statutes.
In addition, you have violating ethical standard adopted by the board, DD, and then definitely the, like the ones that I read at the beginning, and I can reread those if you're so inclined with regard to obtaining a fee through fraudulent representation. Give me one second.
I think those need to be in.
Yeah. Give me one second. I will read them.
So those would be referenced to the having committed an act that constitutes grounds for disciplinary action. And I actually have those citations.
Okay, thank you.
I just also wanted to clarify the record. The citations that were provided at the beginning of the interview were actually to the 2061s, which are the psychologist standards, the applicable standards to Mr. Oliver's application would be 2091 12A, 12P, and 12DD for the ethical standards that were cited by the committee.
Thank you.
Are those okay with you, Dr. Davies?
Yes, they'll be obtaining a fee by fraud. Yes, those are the ones. I appreciate that. Thank you for clarifying.
So, yeah, the language is exactly the same.
It's just a reference.
Okay,
thank you for pointing that out. Any other comments? Questions? We have a motion and a second. All in favor? No, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to say, the more specific we are in giving him feedback, the better, because maybe we'll hear from him in 3 or 6 months with another application. And if we don't spell out what we need from him, maybe we'll just go through this whole process all over again. It would seem to me that any supervision that he gets, a supervisor should have a clue about what his major issue is, and maybe a statement from the supervisor that those issues are being addressed, you know, and having these issues as concretely presented as possible, rather than kind of a slippery reapplication process, which I think was what we got this time, would be in order.
Good comments, Dr. Field. Dr. Davies, what would you mean he was going to reapply at some point?
Please say what I'm going
to. Okay.
I'm going to call the question.
Yeah, agree.
All right. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I think this is a roll call
vote. Ms. Poe?
Yes, Madam Chair. Ms. Shreve?
Yes.
Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
Dr. Davy?
Yes.
Dr. Gill?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Dr. Flowers?
I would like to abstain.
We have five, so motion does not carry. There's no quorum.
There's, the abstention goes towards the quorum.
Okay, so motion carries then.
Yes.
All right, thank you. All right, that concludes our discussion on that item. We'll now move to item number 8, an informal interview. Dr. Neil Olsham, staff, would you like to provide an update of the situation?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. We are passing out information I received from Dr. Olsham yesterday. Yesterday afternoon, Dr. Olsham sent me an email in which he requested a continuance for the informal interview that is scheduled today. He requested a continuance based on medical reasons and provided documentation, which is attached with that email that is going around. As the members may recall, the board subpoenaed Dr. Olsham's appearance today based on several factors. Dr. Olsham had failed to attend the complaint screening committee back in September. At that time, he had submitted an email response approximately 45 minutes before the CSC meeting. The committee voted to forward that complaint to the board and expressed concern that he was not cooperating with the investigation. The committee had also directed staff to issue a subpoena for his appearance before the board. On December 12th, the complaint came before the board for an initial review. The day before that meeting, Dr. Olsham had emailed me requesting a continuance. The board reviewed his request and voted to deny it and proceed with the initial review. The board also voted to issue a subpoena for his appearance at today's informal interview. The complaint is before the members today for the informal interview, and the board will need to determine if they want to approve or deny his request. I did also want to notate that Dr. Olsham has not submitted the client record, which we had subpoenaed his records. So he is not in compliance with this subpoena at this time. In a December 12th email, Dr. Olsham did relate to me that he or his wife would drop off the client records by December 20th. This email attachment was included in your materials, and as of today's date, we still have not received the client records. So I did not receive any correspondence from Dr. Olsham until yesterday afternoon. He requested a continuance.
Thank you. If you recall, this was a complaint originally about Dr. Olsham not sending some relaxation tapes or some tapes to a client, which he had said he would. The client tried to contact him, didn't hear anything. The doctor did not respond really until the client filed a complaint, and then we contacted the doctor.
Yes, and part of the concern as well was that after the complaint was filed, Dr. Olsham did ask the complainant to retract the complaint and drop it.
Correct. So he's not here. Is there any, we could offer him the surrender of the license, or we could move this to a formal hearing. What are our options here?
That would be correct. You could, if the board would like to forward this to a formal hearing, what you may consider is to offer him and the opportunity to surrender his license, and if not surrendered, then proceed to formal hearing.
Right. He has not provided any documentation that we requested. I would suggest we go to formal hearing and in the meanwhile offer to surrender the license. I don't know, what comments, thoughts from the board?
And we really hate saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. He's ignored the board throughout this entire process. If he's this ill, I think you should be medically inactive at the very least. And I would offer him a chance to go medically inactive. And at such a time that he chooses to go active again, then we pursue things from there. But this was a simple matter that I think is pointing to a larger matter. To surrender a license over not sending somebody a relaxation tape is almost a silly sounding kind of thing. but I think it points to the fact that there are problems with his record keeping, there are problems with his practice, there are problems with his health to keep up with his practice. There are problems with him following through with issues before this board, and it goes on and on. He continues to say he's ill, and he's undergoing surgery. I don't know what surgery. He doesn't have an office or a business. It's his wife who's running his records. She could have dropped those things here. He's avoiding this board. But so my guess is he shouldn't be in practice, and he should go medically inactive at very least. And I think that is probably what I lean toward right now, if not suspending his license.
Are you saying option to medically enact, and we go forward to the formal hearing, that he has the option to go off medically now?
Dr. Mohansky, Madam Chair, I'm not sure that the board has an option for medical inactivation. I do know that there is an option to cancel an active license, but in order to do that, the licensee must not be currently under investigation. Which I believe this, this is a current investigation, so that those two factors might prohibit the option that you are currently recommending.
I understand that. I guess the legal question then is, can we do a consent agreement in the investigative stage to go medically inactive?
Looking at the board statutes, I apologize.
Thank you.
I'm not currently.
Dr. Flowers.
Yes, I have concerns as well. Even within his most recent response to the board, he did say he's struggling to keep his practice going. Mm-hmm. He's doing something. I'm not sure what. And I think with the initial complaint screening committee meeting, which he responded 45 minutes prior to the meeting, he was saying he was too busy because he's going to go to an evaluation.
Yeah.
And we've asked for records, which he's promised a number of times, never given them to us.
Right.
We've been subpoenaed for the records twice. Somehow, I would think that he could arrange at least to send us records in a couple of months. And, you know, indeed, if he's really so ill, he can't do some of those things. Should he be practicing, but he wants to maintain it?
Dr. Malala, I think we have a suggestion on the table. We keep debating all the things, why he's not doing this, and we are really getting nowhere. So either he has the option to surrender his license or move to a formal hearing. I'd like to make that motion.
All right, a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Got a motion and a second? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. All right, our next timed item isn't until 11, so we're going to go ahead to item number 16. Our executive director, would you like to update us on this? Or Ms. Michelson?
Sorry, which number?
16.
The PSAS.
Yes.
That would be from Heidi. Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to summarize since you last heard from this group, which was your December board meeting, the follow-up between our office and the PSAS representatives consisted of, if you wish to come back to the January meeting and present updated information, potentially bill language, please notify us. We were assured that they intended to come, and then very recently were advised that they had a bit of a scheduling conflict today. I suggested that they arrive early, the early part of the meeting, and supply us with written materials. At a minimum, the materials would be reviewed even if the agenda didn't permit that, the group addressing the board. My follow-up to request those materials went unanswered, so we have no representatives, we have no materials. For what it is worth, I also did a search as recent as this morning to see if bill language had been filed, and there is nothing. So there's nothing to offer to you with respect to this agenda item.
All right, then we will move on. Let's move to the item 18. This is an item.
Probably going to do it. This item is on the agenda, the PCSAS item is on the agenda, why?
Dr. Bohansky, as I recall, I can check the minutes, but...
Well, it's on the agenda regarding presentation and information from their representatives.
Not for us to take action.
No, and on proposed legislation for Upin, so we was to listen to them. I think they're looking for consensus possibly from us in regards to whether we support it, but they're not here. Dr. Gill hasn't heard this presentation, so I don't want to...
Well, I want it noted very clearly. Very clearly, and this is nothing new. This is year 4 or 5 of the efforts of this group to change our bill and they provide us with nothing. They provide us with no standards manual. They provide us with check our website type of responses. And they're going to drop a bill without telling us. That we should be aware that this is what happens. We contact them, we try to get information, and we get stonewalled constantly by this group. And, you know, we can go debate the merits again with new board members, but I want it very clear that they had another opportunity to appear before this board at the beginning of a legislative session in which stuff is going to happen. Our bill is going to be open. And again, they're not here. And I think it speaks to one of the questions that I asked when I had the director of training of these two programs sitting here. And I asked, what ethics do you follow? What ethics are taught in your program? And neither of them could answer what code of ethics were there. And I reminded them that they were a spinoff of APS and that APS had formally adopted the APA ethics. And neither of them seem to know that, yet their directors are training in these programs. If that's the quality of what their organization is trying to claim as equivalent to APA, and they've got a very strong lobby, which we have none. We have no ability to lobby professionally off of this board. But the person who's not coming here, the person who's not responding, is a professional lobbyist for this group, paid by the state of Arizona. And this is an Arizona Executive Department branch here. It's what we are. And they ignore us. And I'm going to argue until I'm blue in the face to ignore them. I'm sick and tired of the lack of responses, the arrogance, we're better than every other program around. Nobody who's got a PsyD is any good. Nobody who's got a counseling psychology degree is any good. No one in educational psychology is any good. It's just us science people. We should be it. I'm tired of the lack of diversity. I'm tired of the lack of acceptance. I'm tired of their lack of openness, their lack of transparency. And their arrogance toward the profession.
All right, any further comments? All right, we're gonna move to item number 18, which is the last one except for the timed item at 11. This is an item I asked to be placed on the agenda, discussion, consideration, and possible action on the topic of informed consent. I wanted to have a discussion with the board in regards to when we get a complaint at the CSC meeting, and a person that the doctor does not have informed consent, it seems as though sometimes it's weighed as, oh, that's minor, don't worry about it. And then other times it's like, what, no informed consent, that's terrible. And I just think there needs to be some consistency on how the board views informed consent. Is it something that from a CSC standpoint, and the CSC committee is the committee that reviews the initial complaints, is that something that should come to the board as a concern?
Under Arizona law, there are 4 conditions in which informed consent is required. Surgery, prescribing medications, electroconvulsive therapy, and psychological services for assessments and counseling. There is no option in that. That's what's written into Arizona statute. As such, we need to take it very seriously. Our ethics has added on to that a series of mandated reporting statutes, some mental status information on dangerousness, as well as limits of confidentiality. Every psychologist has been trained in that. Every psychology student is trained in that. It's at the core of their ethics programs and classes. The difference that we've seen here, and there have been a couple of them, but the differences that we see here is some folks say that we have a specific form, just like you sign when you go in the hospital that lists all those things up, or you have a surgical procedure, because that's one of the listed ones that's required. I agree with that. Most agencies have that. Many private practices don't. But what they do is write it up as a progress note as part of their initial session and say, I did the following in terms of informed consent. Now, where it's gotten people in trouble is when they only write the one sentence, provided informed consent. We don't know what that was about. Now, are there other add-ons that need to be there? It depends on the paperwork. Most agencies and most large practices have billing issues on it and billing resolution issues on that, which I think are also important for folks to know, because what comes before this board often are billing questions. And we say, what was there in your informed consent paperwork? So we've had different kinds of things that come up. Does it have to happen? Yes. Is it ethically? Yes. Is it required by statute? Yes. But there's no prescribed form. There isn't a prescribed form. 10 different forms could be presented here and they would all cut mustard, generally speaking. We simply, and our profession has simply never provided a template that we all agree upon for how that is. And my guess is some of that varies from state to state as well, especially with formats for mandated reporting of child and elder and vulnerable populations. And that's why we take it case by case. We look at what the person has in their folder, what's traditional. Those folks from my generation who were a little bit form phobic may not have the up-to-date form. Those folks in the newer generation have it all the way through HIPAA compliance. So it's, again, kind of almost a thing we take case by case.
Any other comments?
Is a one-liner okay?
In my humble opinion, sir, no.
No, in the sense that we would not accept that as the CSC, when you move it forward? I guess that's what I'm trying to figure
out. It's not a violation of statute. It's an educational opportunity. If someone is doing documentation that we find subpar, and I would find a one-liner subpar, I would certainly caution them, perhaps with a letter and a CE that they would voluntarily ascribe to go take so that they could learn about ethics. If it was a massive issue, we may need to look at all their documentation and either put a practice monitor in there or a supervisor in there or some darn thing that goes on. Again, that's why it's case to case. We have one here where, as we see frequently, parents were split. They're one parent here, one parent there, and the parent who brought the child in signed the consent of release form, and the other parent wanted to come in and talk with them, and there wasn't a second signed consent form. Well, there was one signed consent form for the chart. Did it really cover informing the other person? Well, it was done verbally, and it was written in the progress note that it was done verbally, but there wasn't a second sign. And those are the kind of struggles that we have. And the psychologists in that case, yes, they changed their procedure and they made sure everybody signed the consent to treat form. But if we could go from office to office to every psychologist in this state and find a different document, a different procedure, and we could, and I've argued for this for years, but it's not going to happen, is that I'd like to see us put a newsletter out or a blog out or something from the board of the most common kind of things that would educate people would be helpful, and that would be a template kind of thing for informed consent, because I think people were trained in different eras and in different states and in different fashion and interpret a lot of that. I think APA's trust used to do that with psychologists, as they would provide continuing education and seminars for them to help lower their insurance rates, and provide templates for folks and say, hey, this is one of the biggest document things that'll get your butt in trouble. Unfortunately, folks don't go to those things enough, and how do you force feed that? It was like the case we had today. It's not in our rules you got to report in 10 days on the DUI. It's in another set of rules that we're supposed to know about. So we put it on our website and said, you got to read these other state rules because this affects all healthcare professionals, everybody with a license in Arizona. And it's not in the psychology rules, but you damn well have to follow it. But there's a lot of those kind of things that hang out there, and that's why we have smart people who sit on this board, smarter than I am anyway, who sit there and help figure that out and map a way out for somebody to practice in a I think, better fashion, to practice in a safer fashion, to practice in a way that provides the protection to the public, which is really our job.
Any other comments?
Yes, one. Dr. Bohansky is one of the smartest people I know.
Dr. Gales?
I would also imagine it varies specialty to specialty. One specialty would want to write one template, and another specialty would want to write another.
Thank you. All right, any other comments? I just wanted to have an open discussion about what we should be thinking of, looking at.
That was a great lecture. I'm sorry.
Thank you. All right, so our next item 11, I guess we have 9 and 10 left, is that starts at 11, so let's take a break until 11, and then we'll reconvene.
When we reconvene, I'm going to ask immediately for an executive session, just so you're aware of that. So attorney's aware of that. I'd like legal advice going into 11.
Should we make that motion now?
We have to go
into not agenda.
It's not agenda. That we need to wait to run the meeting. All right, so let's take a break until 11.
8 minute break.
8 minute break.